This is On Target St. John's. A look at politics, crime, education. What's happening here with the people who know? The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now, your On Target St. John's host, Linda Swain.
And good afternoon, everyone. Well, here comes the sun. We had a little brief respite for a time. I was lucky enough to actually see it, as many people were this morning, but it seems to have retreated again in the St. John's area anyway for the time being. But hopeful nonetheless. I remember driving in and having this warm sensation on my face and realizing that it was the sunlight on me. It's a good feeling for a change. Well, Newfoundlanders and Labradorians are watching the latest COVID numbers across Canada and especially in Ontario with great concern and attention. Ontario has put out the call for help in dealing with the latest wave of cases, the spread of which is linked primarily to the B.1.1.7 variant. Newfoundland and Labrador experienced a similar wave back in February, and the risk of more variants of concern spreading within the community remains. We are not immune. Among the hundreds of people who were infected in the last wave was a name familiar to many here in Newfoundland and Labrador, Damien Follett. He's a local musician, a dad, and a candidate in the most recent provincial election, and he joins me now. Hi, Damien.
Hi, Linda. How you doing? Great to be on.
Good. I scrolled down and got snarled up on your name. Sorry, because another word instantly hit my eyeballs and went through me.
Some of my close friends call me Dame, so you could do that too. It's up
there
to yourself.
You go. Listen, that's my ADHD work once again. What's that?
I need to tell you that the sun is coming out of my paradise.
Oh, well, that's great to hear. That's why it's named Paradise, correct?
I guess so.
Yeah. So listen, how are you doing?
Doing really, really well. All things considered, you know, our whole family had COVID. We were all, you know, isolated in different parts of the house. And it was just a crazy time, Linda. And obviously, we weren't the only family going through it. There was hundreds of families went through the exact same thing. And some people got really sick with it. I mean, we were lucky. Me and my wife were sick, but we never ended up being hospitalized, and the kids were good. So we're just grateful to be through it. I mean, through that part of it. I mean, and, you know, hopefully not get anything again. I mean, who knows? Like you said, there's no guarantee, is there?
No, there isn't. And did you ever imagine that you would be at risk like this?
It's funny. When we got it, I remember saying to my wife, like, you know, of course we're talking on the phone because we weren't allowed to be in the same room. I said, remember we used to watch on TV last year during the first lockdown and see people had COVID, and we were like, my God, it was surreal, like, well, to watch it on TV, and then it's in your house, and people are dropping food on your doorstep. Like, it's just like, it's bizarre to think you went through it. But, I mean, in a way, there was a lot of good came out of it, too. Obviously, I mean, you know, the stories of the generosity of people, not just with us, but with all the families. I mean, I heard from friends of mine who, you know, people were, the kindness was in abundance. And that, as you know, to me, that's really important. And that's what kind of makes us a better community. So that was all really good.
And that's an interesting aspect of this, because as you said, you were all isolated within the house. So how did you get by? How did you make those meals? How did you live?
There was people literally dropping meals on the step. Cooked meals on the step and dropping some restaurant friends of mine dropped off stuff, some takeout. It was just like one of those things where everybody was chipping in. And I mean, for me, I mean, I know a lot of people through the music industry, as you know, we both know through radio and music and television, all those things, right? But it was just incredible to see the generosity of people and people reaching out, making sure that we were okay and the kids were okay. And you know, it was just warmed my heart. And for me, as you know, with my music, I try to make the world a better place through music. And people were returning that favor to me and my family. And it was just, again, incredible.
And we're going to hear a little bit of your music a little later on in the show. But what was it like having COVID-19? You and your family lucky enough to avoid, you know, getting sick enough to end up in hospital. But what was it like having it?
Well, the one thing that I'm telling people, and I mean, you know, I know people that have said to me, hey, man, this is, you know, this is the flu. You just had the flu. And you can't argue with people because they're going to have their own opinions. But from our experience, Linda, I will tell you firsthand, this is not a regular flu. I mean, for example, I was in a basement, in a room, locked away to myself. I've had food over the years. I could go down to Marie's Mini Mart and pick up a Pepsi for myself if I wanted to when I had the flu. I normally wouldn't. You'd stay home. But there was no risk of infecting the whole community. Like, literally, if I had to go into a store, I could infect 100 people potentially. Can you imagine? That's not a regular flu. So my experience and my advice to people is to take it seriously, follow the guidelines, and don't catch this thing, because there's no guarantee of how it will affect you. There's really not. I mean, yes, we were lucky. We had a lot of pain and a lot of, you know, illness at home. But there's other people who end up in the hospital in ICU, and I mean, that's just, it's not good.
So how does this impact you physically, or you and your family members? What kind of symptoms did you have? I imagine you had some fever and those kinds of things. So explain it to us, if you will.
I was lucky enough to escape fever. My wife had some fever. She had a lot of pain. Here's how I'll describe it to you, Linda, because we both had flus before, so we know what the flu is like. I felt like there was something inside my body trying to find the most vulnerable spots in my body, like attacking my back, attacking my neck, attacking my head, attacking my knees. It was everywhere. It was literally felt like this thing was relentless over 5 or 6 days, just trying to infiltrate your body and, you know, make you worse. I mean, it was just a wild feeling. And I'll tell you something else. I had hallucinations, and I spoke to some other people who've had that when they had COVID. I don't know if it was real, if it was your mind playing tricks, but I mean, with the pain, it was just so severe a couple of nights that it was like I was seeing things, and just, again, bizarre, and not like a regular flu. We've had tons of flus over the years, but this thing is different, and it depends on how it hits you. That's what the nurse said to us too. She said, everybody is affected. You know, it's a different, way of being affected and infected by this thing. So some people will end up on a ventilator. Some people, will be at home. Our kids were fine. I mean, they had a little bit of a cough, but thankfully they were great. So, I mean, we're grateful for that. But it's just one of those things where it felt like there was something inside your body relentlessly trying to do something to make you feel worse, if I can describe it like that.
Did you have any breathing trouble?
No, luckily. I mean, we're lucky. We're all pretty healthy in our family. Now, my son is 16. He has some respiratory issues, but he was great. No breathing issues. We were all lucky in that sense, because that was my concern. Obviously, if you end up, having breathing difficulties, then you got to go to the hospital, and who knows what could happen from there. So that was we were fortunate in that sense, and grateful that it didn't affect us that way. But we know lots of people that did have it, worse. I mean, it depends on how it hits you.
And you talked a little bit earlier about how easily spread this virus is. Did you have the variant?
Yeah, it was the B117 from the UK. That's what we all had.
Any idea how you contracted it?
Well, I mean, they're saying that, I mean, the kids at the school, that's where it came from. We don't, to this day, I don't know the full story, but I mean, the kids were going out, I guess, to lunch and in groups, like, I assume, and things like that. But the thing is, Linda, none of those kids were in the UK. I'll defend the kids in this instance. None of them traveled outside of this province. So somebody brought that thing back in here, gave it to a child. The child brought it to that school. It spread, because it spreads, like the nurse said, it spreads like wildfire. So that's to me, it's obvious. It didn't come from the children. The kids didn't pick this up themselves. They picked it up from somebody. Must have traveled, or for work, or I guess for something. It had to be.
And I presume that you and your family were doing all the usual things, wearing a mask and washing your hands as frequently as possible.
Oh my God, everything. Yeah, I mean, like I'm the one who goes to Costco and Sobeys. I'm completely, fed up with it now, going in and wearing a mask. But you have to do it. It's like sometimes I wear a double mask just to be safe. I was doing double mask for the first month after I had COVID, because the nurse said, you're recovered. But, if you want to feel safe, put on two masks, double mask up. And I was doing that because the nurse told me to do it. But we've done everything, the right way. And a lot of families said the same thing. But apparently what the nurse said with these variants, they're way worse for being contagious than the regular COVID-19 virus, if that makes sense, I think.
No, and that's exactly what all the medical experts are saying, that it's so much more easily spread. I want to talk a little bit more about your experience and running an election campaign in the midst of all of that when we come back after the break. My guest today is a local musician, Damien Follett. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
My guest today on Target is Damien Follett. He's a local musician. He also happened to run provincially, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But I wanted to talk a little bit more about your own experience, Damien, you and your family with COVID-19. And we're seeing this massive spread of the illness in Ontario, and it is linked primarily to the B117 variant, but there are other variants of concern out there, and I think we've had one of them identified here besides the B117 variant. But have you suffered any lasting effects, you or your family, since having this?
We don't think we are. I mean, we were a little tired post recovery, but the nurse said that was pretty normal. So no long-term effects, because there's what they call them as long haulers with COVID too. So that's another thing people, that's what separates COVID from the regular flu. People are suffering months afterwards with, headaches and, depression and anxiety and things, just that their brains basically aren't working as they used to. I think that's what how they describe it. So we were fortunate with that too, Linda, I got to say. I wake up every day now, Linda, honestly, I'm more grateful than I've ever been to be alive and healthy at my age. And it's like, we were lucky.
How would you describe your public health journey through all of this?
You mean with the nurses and the staff and all
Absolutely,
that?
Absolutely, yeah.
Incredible. Well, first of all, it's the front lines. They've been doing this for over a year now. Overworked, in my opinion, underpaid. It's just the whole way everything is set up. I've spoken about this before through my music and stuff too. It's just like the disparities in our society with the healthcare system, with people who are underprivileged and things like that. It's just things have to change. I mean, with the seniors, Linda, what happened with the seniors up in the mainland? We were fortunate here that we didn't have those crazy waves here and multiple seniors dying. We've had a small amount of deaths. Obviously, we've been grateful for that. But there's just too much of concern about, seems to be just profits and, money and all that stuff, and not enough concern about treating people with just basic dignity.
Does what you're seeing now in Ontario and other parts of Canada worry you?
Oh, my God. First of all, again, we're looking at the TV going like, thank God we're not in Ontario. We're here in Newfoundland. We're, pretty good place here again. We're trying to be safe. Everybody's following the guidelines. But you look at that and you go, and the cases are, they're compounding. Every day there's more. It's increasing. And the ICU unit is being overwhelmed more and more. More people hospitalized. It's crazy. I don't know. How are they going to rein this in? I'm not a healthcare expert by any stretch. I know very little about the healthcare system, but how are they going to stop it, bring it back?
Well, indeed. And we saw similar kinds of concerns here. You were part of it, for goodness sake.
Right, yes.
You lived it. It's not just theoretical for you. You know what it's all about. So we saw similar kinds of things. And I know the anxiety and worry that I felt and the people around me felt when we saw those numbers continuing to go up and up and up. And even for our little province and our small population, that was very alarming.
It certainly was.
What they're dealing with there, as you say, compounded by, just the sheer numbers that they're dealing with.
Wow.
Are you worried about getting the virus a second time?
Well, here's the thing. There's the P1 variant from Brazil, or there's another one from Africa. Nobody can tell me that I'm immune to the next two because I had the first one. Apparently, I don't know if that's true or not. I watch all the infectious disease specialists on the news. I listen to everybody, try to get the proper information. But I don't know if I am. Apparently there's antibodies. Once you go through COVID, you develop some antibodies. But how long will that last? And now you're trying to get, everybody's trying to get a vaccine. And there's some concerns about the AstraZeneca vaccine, obviously. I don't know if I'm going to sign up for that one. I'm trying to get advice from some medical people that I know. I don't know.
And that was my next question. Have you been vaccinated, or will you get your vaccine when you become eligible?
If I was offered one of the other ones other than AstraZeneca today, I guess my answer would be yes, I would get it right away. That one, I'm trying to get more information, and again, I'm trying to find out, you know, what's the correct. I mean, I'm 59 years old. I mean, I don't think I'm in the danger zone. Apparently, it's 55 and below with the risk. But is that all correct information? I mean, I want to make sure that there's not a 60-year-old man who had risk of a blood clot or something, too. You just don't. There's so many uncertainties, Linda, with the whole situation. And there's so much information. And that's what makes it scary. And that's why there was so much anxiety. And there still is. And, I mean, I'm still anxious now. I mean, you know, my kid is back in high school. I don't know where I stand on all of that. I mean, that's another issue. It's like, should they all be back in there when there's a risk of maybe somebody would travel in and bring in another variant? What if it gets into the school again and we go through the same thing again? Is the risk there now? Is it lower? Can you answer that for me?
I don't know. They're saying that the risk of blood clots from the AstraZeneca vaccine are lower than even getting COVID itself.
Okay.
And wow. Lower than if you were a woman of childbearing age who happened to be on the pill. You know, when you look at the overall numbers, but I'm not the expert. I'm just parroting back some of the information that's out there in the public realm without thinking much about it. You know what I mean? You put me on the spot is what I'm trying to say, Damien.
Well, there's so much information and through open discussion, hopefully me and you will find out more information for our families. I mean, it's like we have to somehow get the correct information and make the right decisions.
And as somebody who's lived through this, whose family has lived through this, what do you make of the information that's out there? How are our public health? I know you said that the public health officials that you dealt with during this whole process were amazing. But what do you think on the higher level from the management point of view of how this has been managed in terms of getting the information out, in terms of the vaccine rollout overall? What do you make of it?
I think they're doing the best they can in a real tough situation. I mean, listen, I would not want to be on one of those teams right now trying to basically keep your population of people, whether it's 500,000 people in Newfoundland or, God forbid, millions in Ontario, safe from this virus and bring it back under control like they're trying to do in Ontario. I mean, it's unprecedented that they're, you know, they've never dealt with anything like this before, obviously. So they're trying to get the correct information out. I mean, all the frontline people, I mean, I just think they're, you know, they should be on the award shows. Never mind the rest of us. It's like they should be getting some awards for the work they're doing. It's just an incredible time. And we're all just, I mean, we're lucky to have all of those people up there on the front lines working for us and trying to keep us safe as best they can. I mean, you know, mistakes are going to be made, I assume, like any other crisis, you know.
We're Newfoundlanders and Labradorians. We're Canadians. We help each other. What do you,
yes.
How do you feel about Newfoundland and Labrador sending some of that support to Ontario?
Well, I believe in humanity, basically. That's my philosophy of music. I believe in we all should help each other out. That's a definite thing. But again, a little concerning that if there's doctors, nurses, frontline workers going to Ontario and then coming back to Newfoundland, you know, please God, everything will be safe and nobody will bring back another variant, a different form of the virus. I mean, that's honestly in the back of my mind, that was my first thought when the premier announced that. I was like, yes, I totally agree with everybody helping each other. We should be doing that more. We wouldn't be in this mess if the world helped each other, if countries helped each other more, if there was more equality and more fairness and more kindness, more compassion, more inclusion, all those wonderful things, Linda, that we talk about. But it's concerning when, you know, again, someone could travel up, come back, and what if? There's always the uncertainty again. That's what it comes down to.
And for in your case, the what if was a it happened. So I want to talk a little bit more about what happened to you and when it happened in terms of your election campaign when we come back after the break. My guest today on Target is Damien Follett. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
My guest today is Damien Follett. You know him as a musician, but he also ran in the last provincial election. And one of the big questions that was raised when Premier Fury dropped the writ back in, oh my gosh, now when's time? Time is nothing anymore, January. When he dropped the writ back in January, that was one of the first questions that was asked. Is it wise to do so during an election campaign? And what if there's an outbreak? And the response was, this is the safest time to do it, which I'm sure a lot of people believed at the time. But you fell ill during all of that. What was it like conducting an election campaign during a pandemic?
Oh my God, Linda, that was just the craziest situation I've ever been involved in my life, to be honest with you. I mean, I was out knocking doors, enjoying it, talking to people. I love socializing. I love talking to people. Met lots of lovely people in the district of Mount Sion. And after 3 weeks, this thing hit, and my family got hit, and I was basically in a basement, you know, making a few videos, just trying to say hello to people and trying to stay in touch with constituents. And it was just the most bizarre situation I've ever been in.
Were you worried initially when you found out that you had it, that you might have spread it beyond your own household?
Oh my God. That was my first thought, because you know, 4 or 5 days or a week before, I was still knocking doors. I'm like, oh my God, then there was kids coming out, and you just think the worst, because it's the anxiety, because again, you don't know the uncertainties of this thing, of the virus, how it spreads, where it spreads, you know, how much of it will spread. And you're thinking, oh my God, am I going to be responsible for making somebody else sick? I mean, it was just, again, the anxiety, Linda, was plus worried about my kids, my wife, myself. Am I going to be hospitalized? I'm almost 60 years old here. But I was like, seriously, I'm not a young person anymore. It was just, I get very anxious even thinking back on those days.
So how did you make that shift even while you weren't feeling well yourself?
Well, I'll credit my campaign manager, Steve Randall, and my assistant campaign manager, Curtis Nee. Two of those guys, they kept things going, kept the campaign going in a positive way. They came up with some really creative ideas of me keeping in touch with people, even with COVID, even isolated in my basement. It was like, you know, through the visual and the social media and all that stuff, it was just they get all credit for keeping me, you know, in the mix. And I did, you know, again, I was still competitive in the election race. So it's but still, it was just like, boy, I look back on it and again, it makes me anxious to think about it.
Should it have gone ahead?
From the beginning, probably not. But I mean, once the writ was dropped, I guess it had to go on. But honestly, I mean, now that I'm not in the campaign, I can say things whether they're politically correct or not. And from my perspective as a citizen of the province and having kids in school, once that high school was infected, I mean, I said to my wife, the premier's going to go, uh-uh, we're shutting this down. I'm a doctor first and foremost here. We're gonna shut this down and basically put the last week when things get back in order, when Dr. Fitzgerald gets everything back safely. We're not going to risk, you know, the health of the kids and the families. I just thought it was crazy to go ahead. I mean, I just thought somebody, whether it was the Elections NL or the Premier or whoever was in charge, they should have, you know, looking back on it now, in retrospect, it should have been postponed.
Was that part of the problem, though, that we didn't, or so it seemed, didn't know who was in charge at the time?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to judge, you know, your leaders and your people in authority when you're not there yourself. I mean, I don't know what, I mean, the pressures that they're under obviously are immense during this time, and you're trying to make the right decision, the correct decision. You know, safety first, I guess, you know, first and foremost, I mean, is paramount. But I don't know. I mean, you look at it and you go like, my God, someone has to step up here and say, okay, hold on, stop the presses. We need to, this is really risky. Because, I mean, when we all had this and all the hundreds of families were infected, I was looking around the town going like, oh my God, I'm still trying to be in an election here. What are we doing? Why are we doing this? And what's more important here? You know, my family right now matters way more than anything else, just like all the other families. I mean, they were in the same boat. So, but I don't know, if you did a poll of people, I don't know if people would say it should have been stopped, postponed, or I have no idea.
Do you think you'll run again at any point in the future?
I would never say never to anything, Linda. I've learned that over the years. You don't say, you know, well, I'll never play that song again, or I'll never play that club again, or whatever it is. Like, you don't say things like that. I mean, people are asking me already. I've had, you know, lots of requests from people saying, you know, just keep going, your positivity. I know during the campaign, our campaign had people from different parties reaching out to us saying, you know, that the fact that Damien Fowler is doing this with the positivity, it's inspiring. It's influencing a lot of good. So that's all. That really inspired me to keep doing what I'm doing, obviously. But running again, it's a big commitment. And I mean, we thought it was going to be 4 weeks, Linda, and it ended up being 10 weeks. So.
And what was that like? I mean, as far as financially, physically, emotionally.
Well, the financial part of it was really stressful because I'm in the music business. So you know what that's been like for the last year. I've been fortunate enough to get some work, you know, but. Boy, it's just been a crazy time for a lot of people. A lot of people, you know, suffering. A lot of people hurting, some more than others. Families are hurting. I don't know. Just listen. The thing that we all have to come together on and realize is that people do have to come first. I had that as part of my campaign platform, not because it looked good on a poster, but because. When you're in public office, whatever you're doing, you're a public servant. You have to put the people before anything else, before your party, before your political aspirations. Nothing wrong with having those, but the people, the citizens, have to come first, especially in a health crisis.
What inspired you to run in the first place?
My mother. She's 89 years old. She's in a nursing home, and again, now that I can say things that are not politically correct. I think Eastern Health needs to do a better job with the nursing homes. I mean, the staff are doing the best they can. The God love them, they're amazing. All the nurses and the workers and everything like that. They take good care of my mom and all the residents, obviously. But just some of the rules and stuff, Linda, I'm not going to get into specifics, but there needs to be some changes because according to the infectious disease specialists, there's going to be another pandemic and it won't be in 100 years from now. So we need to prepare better and we need to be, you know, we need to get ready for it in a better way and treat the seniors with a little bit more dignity, you know.
She must have been front of mind for you when you got sick.
Yeah. Oh boy. Again. Yeah. That's well. We didn't actually tell her that we all had COVID, obviously, because she's 89 years old. Why should she know this thing? Right. It's not a good thing. Another worry for her. Right. So I was just kind of checking in with her and just saying, oh, just stay home for a few days and all this stuff and. But yeah, that's the conversation that I had with my mom. One of the inspiring conversation for running was I told her I said I'm going to run for public office, try to do something for you, Mom, because I said I could sit out here and complain, but if I try to get in the House of Assembly, maybe I can change some rules. Well, I didn't get in, but I still have a voice.
We tend to down politicians a lot, you know, and criticize them for a variety of reasons, a lot of them superficial, because yeah. We don't understand everything that goes on. But I find it always very interesting to find out what it is that inspires a person to make that important step forward, to offer themselves up for public life. And it's often very personal, like your own story.
Exactly. And I mean, I'll say this about the whole political world. I mean, I'm not a fan of the negativity, the negative ads, bashing each other. I'm not a fan of that stuff because it accomplishes nothing. It really doesn't. I mean, just like in any business, any operation you're running, you have to sit down at the table and get the ideas out there in a constructive way. That's what I was trying to inspire when I got in there, and that's what I was trying to bring to the table. But you're right. I mean, people run for a variety of reasons, and a lot of them are, you know, I mean, personal situations. Like, you know, I mean, with whether it's seniors or whether it's, you know, I mean, people in certain occupations, frontline healthcare workers, who knows? And you can't judge people till you're in their shoes. But I mean, now that I've walked in the political world a little bit, I learned a lot. You know, I learned a lot about how it works. And I learned a lot about how it shouldn't be working. It's not. There's things that are going on that shouldn't be going on, in my opinion. So I just, you know, and again, I still have a voice. I'm out here. I voted. I mean, we all have our democratic right to vote, and we can all express our opinion on shows like yours, obviously. So we're all just trying to do the best we can, Linda.
We've been talking a lot about overhauling the Elections Act because clearly it was out of date to deal with the situation that we all found ourselves in collectively. But what about overall electoral reform? You seem to be hinting at it there. Would you like to see some major changes to the way we do things overall?
Yeah, and again, I'm trying to learn more about it, how it all works. I didn't get I lost that last week of the election so much time there. Well, more than 1 week. I lost several weeks, actually, with the 10-week period that went on. But I'm trying to learn more about the Elections Act because, yes, I mean, things need to be done differently. I mean, I don't have all the answers, but the way this worked out and so many people didn't have a chance to vote and seniors waiting on the phone for hours and, you know, with anxiety and with COVID going on all around you in your community, not fair, not right, and we need to do better. We have to do better, all of us. I mean, from the premier on down, all of us need to make our province better and the country.
Would you encourage others to come forward knowing what you know now?
Totally. Totally. I would not hesitate to say to someone, listen, if you've got some ideas, if you think you can make a difference and make this place better, please step up to the plate and do your part. That's it. Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about being a musician during a pandemic because that's another whole set of challenges and difficulties. We'll be back right after this. My guest today is Damian Follett.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And my guest today is local musician Damian Follett, because that's how people best know you, Damian, for your music and your songwriting. And, you know, on top of all of the challenges that you faced in the last year, and who would have thought any of us would be dealing with all of this, especially so long after this new thing happened to us just over a year ago. But you've been a musician, and the creative community especially has been hard hit by this pandemic, unable to, you know, do live performances and the rest of it. How have you been affected as a musician?
Well, I guess like a lot of my fellow musicians, I mean, there was times, like there was months went by and there was literally no work available, no gigging, no live gigs, no concerts, whether it's playing weddings or clubs or functions or corporate events or theaters, you know, festivals, anything. Everything has been affected by this, Linda. So it's been crazy for myself and all musicians out there.
And how have you been keeping busy musically?
Well, I last year joined the whole pandemic. The last year, I mean, I've especially in 2020, I was online daily with people just because people, I found like music was kind of a healing thing for people. It was getting us through our days and through the evenings, myself included. So I did a lot of that, as did a lot of other musicians. There was a lot of shows online, Facebook Live, you know, or whatever other venues they could do it on. Everything I did was Facebook Live. And I mean, you know, people were pretty generous when you were doing the shows as well. People would, you know, like pay some admission charge, even though you weren't sometimes asking for it. So it's been a thing of everybody trying to work together and help each other out, I think.
And we all know that the creative inspiration comes in some cases, and sometimes it doesn't come. But has the last year and a half been fodder, I suppose, for some creative creativity? I've lost my creativity in putting together that sentence.
Buddy, are you asking, was there a lot of creativity in the last year?
Yeah, basically. Is this, you know, everybody's sort of home, you've got time to think about things, you're mulling over situations, the enormity of things, you know, you really have...
That's kind of a positive, I guess, aspect of it, where you had time to actually, you know, really hone in on a song and work on something and not rush out to the next gig and, you know, just take your time working on some material. I mean, I've gotten a couple of great, you know, a few great tunes out of the last year. I mean, it's just, I've heard some stuff from some other people, some great stuff as well. You know, inspired by a very dark time, obviously, but you're still trying to keep hope alive, keep that positive, you know, the positive vibes going for people, because we all need that more than ever. I mean, but again, I'm not naive enough to ignore all the darkness in the world right now. There's a lot going on, Linda, a lot going on, and we need to spread as much good as we can.
Indeed, and I think anybody who has a social media account knows just how, you know, how easy it can get. You can get caught up in those whirlpools of negativity. It, you know, some of us have had to take a serious break from it, and myself included. I've had to just put it aside and walk away from it because it is not helping me in any way. And I'm sure it's true of a lot of people these days. Do you find it difficult to sort of keep your mind about yourself when it comes to, you know, this onslaught that social media has become?
What I've learned to do with social media over the years is just try to focus on the things that are positive, that are hopeful, and that are informative, and then try to get the right information, try to inspire people with some good vibes. But again, don't be naive enough to think that the darkness is not out there, because there is a lot of it out there. But you have to counteract that with the good stuff. I mean, there's still, you know, the majority of people are good out there, Lynn. I mean, this is the bottom line that I know from my experience, and you can see it out there. So you just have to focus on that as much as possible. And, you know, I mean, like, try to help out those who are going through those dark times. But sometimes you have to move on.
And stay grounded, I think, is important. Try to keep a perspective. You know, we do tend to focus on the negative. That's human nature. You could hear 10 great stories, inspiring stories in the course of a day, and you will remember the one negative thing because it affects you in a different kind of way. So how do you keep that positivity and spread that positivity? Do you find sometimes you're just sort of gritting your teeth and working through it, or do you actually find that positivity in there?
Well, I think I have my own struggles, just like any human being. I mean, we all have different struggles and we deal with them different ways. I'm very fortunate to have the music and the community of people that support my music and the message that we're trying to get out there, because without all of that support, I probably wouldn't be able to keep this going. So, I mean, all of that movement of good and of kindness and compassion and inclusion and all those good things, that's an energy that's really powerful. And I think that inspires me to keep this going and keep spreading it and keep writing, keep putting the music out there and keep fighting the good fight, basically. That's what I'm trying to do, as are many others.
I think humanity is always looking for that sense of community and belonging, and it's easier in places with smaller populations to be able to hold on to those feelings as opposed to great big metropolises where everything becomes just one sea, if you know what I'm saying, or what I'm trying to get at, I suppose. So I know that you draw a lot of inspiration from the place from which you are living. Is that a big part of that?
It's a huge part of it. I mean, I still think this is a great place to live and raise a family, and you know, it's a great place to grow up in. I mean, my hometown, Placentia. I'm appreciating it now more as I get older. I was talking to some friends of mine just over the last couple of months. We've all learned to appreciate it a lot more. The fact that we had this safe, you know, haven of a place to grow up in, and we could roam from town to town. You know, we just had the world at our fingertips. It's an amazing place. And when you staycation in Newfoundland, Labrador, then you realize too, wow, there's so much great stuff here. And we just have to, you know, not take it for granted and appreciate it more and be grateful that we have it all. There's no place like home, Linda.
There's no place like home. Tap those heels together. We're going to play a song of yours called No Place. And I want you to talk a little bit going into it before we leave you for the day, because I know you're a busy guy. You got things to do. So we're going to go out with a song today on Target. Talk a little bit about this song first.
The song is called No Place Like Home, actually.
There you go. I just not lobbed off the tall end of it there. Go ahead. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's written with my friend Des Gammon, a lifelong musical friend of mine, also from Placentia. Basically, it was written about the love that we all have for this place. And, you know, and when we all move away, we all want to come back. Some of us don't get to do that. But there's always that urge to draw you back to the island here, especially for myself. I always wanted to come back here. I did the traveling with the music over the years, but I just really believe in this place. I believe in the people, and I just believe that it's still the greatest place, you know, in the world. That's what the song is about. It's about appreciating, but again, you know, not ignoring the darkness that's around us. There's a lot of stuff, a lot of problems we have to sort out. But if we work together, we can accomplish a lot.
Damien Follett, local musician, thank you very much. We're so happy to hear that you're doing okay, you and your family, along with many others who have been through all of this in the last little while. We'll be back tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Thanks for listening.